welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today will be Peter Salmon, and we did venture boldly to the movie theater for this week's show, and reviewed the movie there. Really, it is the movie, because it is the biggest movie you can watch in a theater right now, and I don't just mean in size, I just mean in terms of stature, and you can probably guess what that movie's gonna be. And we're gonna also talk a little bit about going back to the movie theater and seeing the movies in theaters and what that felt like, because it is a very unusual and special treat these days. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new sci-fi action blockbuster, Tenet. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to continue with our run the series, sort of mini-series of different franchises, and ranking all the entries therein. This week, though, we are going to mix that up. We've only done one, and we're already mixing it up, so it seems. But so instead of a movie series, we are going to consider the filmography of Christopher Nolan and rank the 10 previous films he's done prior to Tenet. So Tenet is his 11th feature film. He's done a couple of shorts and a couple of things in between, but in terms of his feature films, this is 10, and we will rank them all and run the series on Christopher Nolan films, which does actually include a series of films in its own right. Anyway, so number 10, I have put here Dunkirk, which is the last film he did prior to Tenet. It is the World War II story of the evacuation of British troops from the beaches of northern France after France fall to Germany in World War II. It's clearly Nolan's attempt to say, oh, hey, Oscars, you like war movies? Here's Christopher Nolan's war movie. And sort of in, I did this again, none of this is to say that just because it is at the bottom of this Christopher Nolan list, it means that it's a bad movie. The best Christopher Nolan movie is better than the best Edward J. Wood Jr. movie. obviously, but there is something very cold about Dunkirk. I mean, not that Christopher Nolan is an overly emotional or sentimental filmmaker, but you don't really get many characters in Dunkirk. You know, the only kind of like character-driven story you really get is the one on the Mark Rylance's boat, where he picks up Cillian Murphy, and Cillian Murphy doesn't want to go back to rescue the others from the beaches of Dunkirk. That's really kind of the only character-driven story. The rest of the times, it's the guys in olive drab on the beach, huddling, worried, concerned, trying to avoid dying in German air raids. Also, the timing and the synchronicity doesn't quite work, I think, in Dunkirk, although it is a neat trick, because the timing of the aerial battles and the people sailing across the strait and the people on the beach are living in three kind of very unique different time periods, it doesn't quite work in the film, at least from my point of view. Number 9 is Insomnia. This was Christopher Nolan's third film. It was one he made between Memento and Batman Begins. It's a very unusual Nolan effort, because he, aside from Wally Pfister, who was his longtime DOP, it really involves none of the usual Christopher Nolan players, either in front of the camera or behind the camera. It wasn't his story. He didn't write the screenplay. It is a very unusual product in the Nolan oeuvre. Having said that, it is not a conventional cop thriller, although that's kind of what it starts out as. Once you get to sort of the 30-minute mark, things change very, very quickly, and it becomes a sort of cat-and-mouse game about why people kill, the lengths they go to cover it up, what makes a good guy a good guy, what makes a bad guy a bad guy. And at the center of it, you have the two very, very great, very different performances from Al Pacino and Robin Williams. Robin Williams especially is so restrained and so not laid back per se, because I think that's exactly the wrong term, but he really digs in deep somewhere to find this character Walter, who is the confessed killer of the young woman Al Pacino comes to Alaska to investigate. It's really quite the acting clinic between those two. And, you know, you don't even see Robin Williams till at least after the hour mark. It's he's on the phone before that. It's just really great performances all around. Number eight is Interstellar. I think a lot of some of the people behind it were also behind Contact, like some of the scientists who were... worked on Contact, also worked on Interstellar, and both these films are tied in that they are sort of meticulous scientific kind of thrillers that in the final act are undermined by a lot of sentimentality and a lot of, I think, fantasy elements that aren't there in the first two-thirds of the film. Essentially, the humanity is saved with love, and hardly the message and impression you get from the first part of the movie. However, it is part of the McConaissance. Matthew McConaughey is very, very good in the film as a father who, former NASA engineer who gets the opportunity, part of a mission, to go through a wormhole and find perhaps an alternative world for humanity to live on. And there's this whole great background in the film about how society has become anti-science and, forced to abandon hopes of traveling to the stars because of the wreck the Earth has become. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff in it. And I just feel like when you get to the end, it's also probably about 30 minutes too long at that. But anyway, speaking of long, The Dark Knight Rises, which is the final chapter of Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, I think a lot of people, a lot of neckbeards, let's say, you know, people who are a little too into comic books, I think they think it veers too far from the Batman legend. I would make the point that it is, it manages to blend well a lot of Christopher Nolan's own ideas and themes, and a lot of the probably the most legendary Batman stories, The Knight's End, which is the story where Bane breaks Batman, the No Man's Land story. There's a lot of stuff going on in Dark Knight Rises, at least three different villains, maybe even four or five different villains, but I feel like it really manages to provide an interesting conclusion to Nolan's Batman saga, and has a lot of interesting takes on characters who, you know, have gotten the short shrift in films in the past, like Bane. If anyone remembers the appearance of Bane in Batman and Robin in 1997, where he's not even really a character at all. Number six is Batman Begins, which was Nolan's kind of Hollywood breakthrough, showed that he could handle the big budget. I think people also underestimate Batman was in the dump after Batman and Robin, which was 8 years before Batman Begins. There were several attempts to try and bring back the character and a direct adaptation of Batman Year One, going Batman Beyond, doing Superman versus Batman. It just, none of it seemed to come about fairly well. And then you get somebody like Christopher Nolan, who's basically like, has two thoughts, which is one is to ground the character in something very real and something very authentic, while at the same time openly embracing a lot of the things that make Batman the character in the comic book so great. The Dark Knight idea, the hiding in the shadows, the bat iconography. It's really, really fast. It's not completely there. His ideas, they're not completely solidified, but it was a very provocative start in terms of resuscitating this character. And it's just a great film on top of all that. Great popcorn movie. Number five is Following, which was Christopher Nolan's first movie. I'm not sure how hard it is to find on DVD. I rescued the DVD copy of Following from Thomas Video when it closed. But it's a small movie. It is artistic with a capital A. It is 16mm black and white. But a lot of the themes and ideas that Nolan has played with in the last 22, 23 years are already there. The idea of the protagonist who doesn't know all of the things that are contributing to his own story, the characters with fake identities, twists, surprises, unreliable narrators. It's kind of all there, and it's really a fascinating film. And it kind of feels like he was filming it on the down low. Like he was filming it and this is probably true too, that whatever spare moments he could, sneaking certain scenes wherever he could. It's an interesting story about this robber who kind of breaks in places and, you know, for the thrill of it. And it feels like Christopher Nolan is kind of making a movie for the thrill of it, like finding locations wherever he can, just being himself, because he did shoot this film himself. So just him, the camera, the actors, shooting it wherever they could, whenever they could. Which is completely different from his number four film, in my estimation, Inception. I wouldn't note, it's interesting, you know, the last, like, sort of big, iconic action movie to come out before Inception was probably The Matrix. And The Matrix had all these kind of imitators. Nobody's really kind of imitated Inception, except perhaps Christopher Nolan, and we may get into that in this week's review. But it's interesting to note that Nolan has a particular style, a particular voice that has been very, very hard for people to replicate, even on just a stylistic basis. Although you can make the argument he sort of introduced the idea of going more practical and doing as much as you can in camera, and that has been copied a lot. But just in terms of a lot of the high concept ideas he brought in Inception, that's really been not replicated. It's high concept. It's got a great cast. I appreciate Christopher Nolan. this idea, and again, he replicates it in Tenet, you know, good-looking men in well-tailored suits fighting with their fists. Not something a lot of people are doing. There's big sequences, but they're not big visual effects sequences. And it also takes a lot of time and care in making sure that people understand what's going on. And I'm not sure that's something Nolan himself did as a sort of his coming from his own ideas about how to do the film, or if it was a studio note that, you know, slow down, you need to sort of make sure people are kind of more aware of what's going on in the movie. But it does a really great job of sort of laying out the world and how the world works, and that sort of makes it easier to digest. I really don't understand people who are like, I don't get Inception. Well, it's not that hard to get, but to each his or her own. Number three, I put The Dark Knight, which definitely captures a moment thematically with a lot of its ideas about surveillance and doing anything and everything possible to end terror, and it was really of a moment that way. Looking at the bigger picture, though, it was kind of like the last big movie to come out, the comic book movie anyway, that did not rely on expanded universes and this idea that this character is a one part of a smaller world, because that summer also Iron Man came out. Granted, Dark Knight Rises comes out in 2012, and Man of Steel wasn't initially set up to be the first entry of an expanded universe. They kind of backdoored that, but at the same time, Dark Knight is kind of the last of a kind, sort of the last movie, the last comic book movie that nobody was worried about. Not just the future chapters of this one character's story, but also the other entries of other characters who are part of the same expanded universe, and there's something very, very refreshing about that. Number two, I have The Prestige, which is not based on a Nolan story. It's based on a book by Christopher Priest, and it's a great book, and I loved that book before The Prestige was ever in the queue to be the next great Christopher Nolan movie. However, the book sort of plays with a lot of ideas that Christopher Nolan has about the function of story, the trick, presenting the trick, the magic trick, how a magic trick is very much like making a movie. You want to amaze people, you don't want to show them how you do it, but at the same time, the way you do it is very, very simple, and you kind of kick yourself when you realize how simple the trick is for not figuring it out beforehand. And a lot of that really plays into The Prestige, and at the center of it you have Christian Bale and Hugh Jackman as dueling magicians trying to outdo one on each other and kind of destroying each other in the process. And you get a really great David Bowie cameo as Nikola Tesla at the center of it. And if you've been keeping track, that of course means the number one movie is Memento, a simple tale of a man trying to find his wife's killer. That is not so simple in the end. It is told backwards, so you start at the end of the story and work backwards to the beginning. But even at that, and you're watching the movie, you're like, how are you understand the thematic conceit that you're seeing things through the eyes of the main character who has the handicap of not being able to form short-term memories. So you get that feeling watching the sequences backwards, but you wonder to yourself, can this movie surprise you in its final twist? And surprise, it can. It is very, very interesting to watch how Nolan, being able to work backwards from the end of the story to the beginning of the story, is still able to surprise you. That's a rare kind of treat. It's not just a gag doing the film or telling this film story backwards. It is really kind of a way of seeing the story and appreciating the main character's disorder. And ultimately, the way the main character chooses to live his life, which is sort of all important in terms of understanding his drive and his point of view in the film and why he lives and why he chooses to live the way he does. Anyway, I will leave that there because we do have to get to the music so that we can get to the review. We will review Tenet, Christopher Nolan's 11th movie, coming up after the musical break. You are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I be swagging on the waves like a line of words. Move in first on my turf, I'm out of line. I put in work, I draw the line and cross it first. I need the time, I need the search. It's just like one and make it work. Skirt, skirt, in a verse. Skirt, skirt, run and land. Boeing jet, make it land. It's slow motion when I dance. In your eyes, I see your trance. I run away and then you prance. If I show the hideaway, will you hide out and let it blam? Ain't no time I face the scams. I know. Yeah.
All I have for you is a word. Tenet. It'll open the right doors. Some of the wrong ones, too. Ah! Use it carefully.
To do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
I'm not saying Armageddon here.
No. Something worse.
And that was a clip from Tenet. It's the new film from writer and director Christopher Nolan, and it stars John David Washington, Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki, Dimple Campagna, Michael Caine, and Kenneth Branagh. So I am now being joined on the line by Peter Salmon. Peter, how are you today?
Doing good. School's back on, so just dealing with that. Yeah, we're getting the students back. Although it's I think 1/10 or something, but yeah. It's definitely school mode is back on.
You don't have any classes on campus, do you?
But no, just engineers. Which makes sense, unfortunately.
Those poor people do have to mask up and go to campus. We, however, masked up and went to the movie theater.
And yes, we did.
So I just thought we would kick off the review of Tenet just to talk about the experience of going back to the movie theater. How did you find it?
Oh, I thought it was great. I thought it was really nice. I missed it. And there wasn't that many people, so, it was great. It was safe. I did find the music was too loud at first. Do you know what I mean? There's less people in the audience, so less kind of taking in the sound. So my ears kind of hurt for the first bit, but, other than that, I thought it was really great. I did enjoy how much the Galaxy Cineplex workers made sure that we were, following those rules and everything. So, yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder
were
if...
Were you a little scared?
No, I wasn't scared. Not that I'm, ultra brave or anything, but it's just, I think that... we've been, in terms of going out on the short trips and going to the stores and things, we kind of have that down pat and in the back of our heads, wearing the mask, physical distance and all that stuff, that the unknown quantity here is going in and sitting there wearing your mask for an hour or 2 hours or however long the movie is.
Close encounter with other people, mm-hmm. Less than going to a restaurant or something of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what about you? Did you find it maybe too loud at first? Or you were okay?
I did find it too loud, and it made me wonder if we've forgotten...
People are absorbing it, right? Or ears had just forgotten how loud it was.
Well, yeah, the ears, if you go every week, maybe you get used to just the way they do that, or perhaps I was wondering, and this is not to blame the projectionists at all, but I'm wondering if maybe they've forgotten how to calibrate.
Yeah, that's true.
I think also, before we get into Tenet, I just think that Tenet itself is especially loud, because Tenet's actually the second film I've seen in the movie theater. I saw New Mutants about a month ago, and it was fine, but it's also not a big, loud action movie. So, I don't know. I would have to maybe see a third movie to compare. I don't know what that would be or when that would be, but, I think generally that there was a big loudness of the film that was kind of uncomfortable at times. However, the experience itself, for people who may not, I went to the Galaxy at Woodlawn.
Oh, yeah, I went to the other one. Oh,
okay, cool. And the way they have it set up there is that they've moved the concierge desk, where you go in and show your ticket, they moved it to the very front of the theater, and they don't scan your ticket anymore, but they kind of direct you to where what theater you go into, and they've kind of taken all the bric-a-brac, all the stuff that they have in the aisles, all the standees and things, and it's kind of more open and more loose, so that there's more ways to physically distant, and I found that I found that very, yeah, it was very, yeah, they've
Same
got their they've got their stuff together, as it were. And I saw it in a theater. When I went and saw New Mutants, it was just me. But I went on like a weekday afternoon when I knew there was a very good chance it would be just me in the theater, and that was kind of like my sole intent. But I went to see Tenet on Saturday afternoon, one of the earliest shows on Saturday afternoon. It was me and four other people, and I sat behind everybody else and kind of off to the side. You have to choose your seat, so I didn't know that going in, but it turned out that it just worked out very well for me in terms of getting that physical distance in. And
I don't think it matters where, but you pick your seat, right? Like you just said? Yeah, I like that.
Right. Which, I mean, they were experimenting with before COVID, with, you know, booking your own seat and choosing your own seat before as you're buying the ticket. But, I mean, seems kind of prescient now that they had that technology available, and now it's kind of mandatory when you go in. All right, let's talk about the movie.
Tenet.
Yes, and we're going to try and be as spoiler-free as possible.
Oh, I know.
Because people may be interested in seeing this film,
yeah,
but may not be interested in going boldly to the movie theater like us. Although I think it is, I'm not sure if it's at the Mustang now, but I know that there have been a lot of drive-ins that have been running Tenet too. So there's that. So let's start with just some initial thoughts about Tenet. What did you think about Tenet?
I know not everybody thinks this, I really enjoyed Tenet. I thought it was great. I forget if it was us that reviewed it, but I did not love Dunkirk, but I really loved Tenet. I did. I can sort of see why. I can sort of maybe possibly understand why people are really hating on it, but I thought it was great. And a lot of the issues people had with it, you know, we'll talk about it soon, but I do not agree with them, such as audio and everything. But yeah, well, what were your thoughts on Tenet? The opposite?
No, I enjoyed it too. I did have issues with the audio. I'm not typically nitpicky like that, but I found it particularly, like, I know people were kind of miffed. To go back to sort of Christopher Nolan's history with this, there was a IMAX preview of The Dark Knight Rises that was attached to one of the Mission Impossible movies, and I saw that Mission Impossible movie in the IMAX, so I was able to see the preview. And famously, the way Bane's mask worked in that is that his dialogue sounded kind of mumbly. And I remember a lot of people complaining about that, but I personally wasn't bothered by it.
No, me neither. I didn't know until this Tenet issue that people thought that was bad.
Right.
That happens when you wear a mask. It makes it more real. When it makes it seem kind of crazier, right?
It's true, but Nolan ended up adjusting it. So when you see The Dark Knight Rises as the finished film, he fixed that problem, so Bane's dialogue is perfectly understandable. But in that initial IMAX preview, he had it the other way. And so I think that problem has sort of been transferred to Tenet. And again, I don't know if it's like the projectionists and the calibration is in sort of the movie theaters, if they sort of, you know, they're sort of off their game with that, because I found it particularly annoying in Tenet that you have these scenes where there's the music and a lot of times there's action going on, people are wearing masks, they're in hazmat suits or something, and then there's also important information being disseminated about the backwards time technology and the plan that they are trying to accomplish. And that is, you know, I at the end of the day, that is kind of something that pops you out of the film, because you're actively trying to figure out what's going on, as opposed to just letting the action happen and understanding it as it goes. And I'm not one of these people who... I remember when Inception came out, and a lot of people were saying, ooh, it's super complicated, you really have to pay attention. And it's like... And I saw it, and I was like, well, this doesn't seem that complicated.
No, Tenet really isn't. I do want to say I don't agree with you on the audio. I didn't find any issue. So what was the issue people were having? Trouble understanding what Pattinson and Washington were saying?
I think the issue is I think there are scenes where, and I think this is sort of especially noticeable in the final action sequence, where everybody is wearing masks and ventilators and things, and they're communicating over the radio. And of course, it's a big action scene, so there's explosions and gunfire. And
that's why, you don't need to fully hear them. And in real life, you wouldn't fully hear them, right? It's like Bane. It just makes it seem to me more real. Yeah, I don't know. I think it helped me get immersed. You know, I wasn't thinking the whole time about, oh, they definitely did this audio, you know, in a microphone, months after the film was done, you know. Yeah, I liked it. It just added immersion and made their voices sound a little gruffy and cool. I also understood everything. But I'm the kind of guy where, a lot of it is kind of lip sort of read. But, oh, no, they didn't have their lips read. So, no, it must have just been my ears. But, yeah, I can sort of see why people are complaining to that. But I actually really enjoyed the audio. And I like that he does that. And I do like that he has a lot of the times the mechanical things going on in the background, the explosions. And I'm okay that it can overpass the dialogue because that's kind of also what it's like in real life. So, yeah, his music's always been like that. It really it blasts, right? It shakes. It's a really low bass, right? So I'm okay with some of those sounds cutting out the audio a pinch.
I could
see people's issues.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a matter of personal taste. I personally didn't feel like I was losing any of the plot, but the extra effort makes you kind of takes you out of the movie. That's just, again, my personal.
Okay, well, and that's been seen in so many reviews. So yeah, I think on average I'm more of the odd one out. So yeah, I understand your point.
I mean, it's possible too. I mean, it is very clearly an aesthetic choice, and there's a line very early on where John David Washington is learning about the inversion. And the technology behind that, and he's told by Clemens Posey is the scientist. She tells him, don't try and understand it, just feel it.
Oh well, yeah. And Robert Pattinson makes a little joke about a Back to the Future reference.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So, he has, I forget, but he has a term that's based on the one character in Back to the Future.
You're not thinking fourth dimensionally. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing where that's why I don't understand when people, they're complaining about Tenet is not understanding, and it's there's literally jokes about how you don't really need to, and they don't fully understand it yet either, right? At least John David Washington, he doesn't fully understand how all this time travel is working, right? Or not even really time travel, whatever you want to call it. I guess sort of time travel. So yeah, that's why I was okay with that.
Yeah, it's. I think Christopher Nolan likes to. I think he likes to not have to try and fill in all the blanks, and he likes making you as the audience member sort of catch up to where he is, because he's laying something out. He's showing you the infrastructure. Actually, he doesn't really show you the infrastructure of the film. He just sort of puts you somewhere and says, you know what? Figure out how to get out of here yourself. And
yeah, you're supposed to use your imagination for a lot.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. It's just, I think that the conceit in Tenet with the inversion of time and things, it's a little bit more complicated of an idea than Inception, where it's, I think Inception is very clear about the idea of the levels of the dream and how the deeper you go in the dream, the more time you have.
Versus, where's this one's not?
Yeah, it's not. It's just not especially clear, and it's going to be one of those movies. And I actually saw somebody online say this, that they hated Tenet first time watching it, and then they rewatched it, and then started enjoying it. So it's one of these things that's going to definitely.
I know a guy too, Sean, that he did the exact same. Then he didn't like it, saw it again, and he really did like it.
Yeah, it's going to reward multiple viewings. Yeah.
I think a lot of the time it's because the first time people are viewing it like Inception and trying to figure it out the whole time, where it's not that kind of film, at least to the degree of Inception. He made this, his focus upon this was more a fun ride than some fun mind game. And I thought he did great with that. But I think the sprinkle of more Inception kind of elements present are still, they're great.
Well, the design is more important to this too, because it's not just a matter of the dreams and going into the dreams and going deeper into dreams and all that. The very conceit of the movie is also the technical trick of it, with the whole idea about Tenet being a palindrome, and the whole idea of the Satyr square, and the five words that you put them in the square and you can read them any way, up and down, backwards, forwards, and it all works out the same. It's he has to construct the movie like that as well, and that's another reason why it'd be sort of interesting to revisit this and put the stopwatch on it and wonder if the first airport scene in Oslo happens at roughly the same point as the second Oslo airport scene, if you're watching the movie backwards and forwards, and whether like the film works out like a palindrome.
I never noticed that. That's awesome.
I mean, that would be an interesting thing, but it's kind of the curse of this movie too, that it's coming out now, and people may boldly venture out to watch this once in the middle of the pandemic, but having seen it once, probably won't go out for that. I mean, with obvious exceptions like your friend, people won't go out and try it that second time to in order to see the various gears click in and notice where the story, notice things about the story that you might have dropped in the first viewing, and that's kind of a shame, because I think this is definitely one of those movies that rewards multiple viewings.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just going back to the audio quickly, because we were talking about how they're dealing with the time when it comes to the dialogue and how it sounds when someone's time traveling. I thought that audio was done really well. Do you know what I mean? When the layering of your present and your past dialogue, I thought that was really, really cool sounding, and I thought that was well done.
Well, that's another reason why you want
to. So just another, just a further point of I wanted to make about Christopher Nolan is he works so hard without using such advanced technology, right? Like, that is just two basic dialogues, and then inversed and layered together, and it's beautiful. That, and I was just thinking about it. We'll probably talk even more about this, but the scene where Robert Pattinson drives a car backwards, right? It's done so well, and it's Robert Pattinson actually driving a car backwards, right? But it's beautiful looking. It's wonderful and it's impressive. But there was no, CGI or whatever. It was just real. It was real. His visuals are an art, right?
Right. Well, that's the way they did it. Is they filmed it the one way forwards, and then they filmed it the other way backwards, so that when you see it the opposite way. And Kenneth Branagh, who plays the villain, he actually, there's a scene where Kenneth Branagh going backwards in time is interrogating John David Washington, who is going forwards in time, and you hear Kenneth Branagh reciting his dialogue backwards, and that's not an ADR trick. He was actually speaking his dialogue backwards.
That's crazy.
Which, talk about the attention to detail, but to go back to the audio thing, that's another reason why you want the audio to be as clear as possible, so that when you get to this point where you have backwards going Kenneth Branagh speaking backwards English, it's abundantly clear that I mean, it is kind of clear in the scene, obviously, but you kind of want that explicit that this is the backwards Kenneth Branagh talking to the forwards John David Washington. But I mean, that's, I mean, we've beaten the audio issues to death. But yeah, this is a marvel of filmmaking, and I think this actually has the lowest number of VFX shots of any of Nolan's biggest his big Hollywood blockbusters. Anyway, it's really like even his Batman stuff.
Yeah, well, it's not like even Dunkirk where there's scenes with such an immense amount of people that even he has to use a little pinch of it. But yeah, I think it's just different things like that. But I'm very okay with that. Very okay with that. I thought also the film, it was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. One of the most beautiful for me was the scenes out, I don't know if it was out in the boat or the ones where it was that area in the ocean with a bunch of, what are those things called? We got them, they blow around and they save the earth and all that jazz.
The windmills?
Yeah, the windmills. It was that those scenes were in the ocean. There was just an endless amount of windmills, right? I just thought it looked so cool. And you can tell with Nolan, it was an actual part out in the ocean with that many windmills, right?
Yeah, that's like a lot of places offshore in like the North Sea where they get a lot of wind.
Branagh's character, Andre Sator, where his boat was, Amalfi Coast, Southern Italy. Beautiful, gorgeous, right? I want to go there. But, you know, I'm not a millionaire, so I don't know if it's possible. But it was just really beautiful to see on the big screen, you know? I don't know how much it spends just to go to these locations for things he could do on a set in L.A. And no one would really notice a difference. But there's, you know, well, actually, you know what? No, I think there's definitely a noticeable difference. So good on you, Mr. Nolan.
Yeah, that's the Amalfi, that's right, the Amalfi Coast, which is actually a tourist destination in Italy, so I imagine there is
ridiculously expensive.
I imagine there's some like discount some discount packages one can get. It's a beautiful film. I mean, it's also Christopher Nolan indulging his James Bond James Bond fantasies. I mean, Inception is very much like a James Bond film as well.
But he's been open about it. I think in particular that's clear with Kenneth Branagh's character. He's like every James Bond villain, right?
Kenneth Branagh is such a cartoon in this, but I love it. No,
he's even more over the top than, you know, the I guess the top hat guy and all the other earlier villains, or just any of the villains. He does it great. Yeah,
it's interesting too, because thinking back on Inception, there really isn't a villain in Inception, but
Tenet is dreams kind of. But yeah,
I mean, there's stuff in the dreams, of course. I mean, I guess Marianne Cotillard is kind of a villain in Inception, now that I'm thinking about it out loud. But like to have Kenneth Branagh and the scene where John David Washington shows up for the dinner, where Kenneth Branagh says to him, "How do you want to die?"
Yeah,
that's such a James Bond scene.
Yep,
even right down with John David Washington going, "Why, I want to die old," and Kenneth Branagh says, "You've chose the wrong profession." It's so over the top, but I love it.
Yeah, no, I think Kenneth Branagh, yeah, he did a really great job. I also think there was a couple times where it was less comedic from him, and it was genuinely some fear. In particular, for me, when he would have encounters with, you know, Elizabeth Debicki's character, Kat, you know, when he would start to get like violent with her, it felt real. His acting and in particular hers and the fear she showed. So I thought that was really well done. And that's something that maybe you don't get as much with a James Bond character. You know, they don't go a lot of the times that in depthly into, you know, female abuse and things like that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
So I thought that was really great.
And I want to add, too, this movie let Elizabeth Debicki be her tall ass self.
Oh, she was great there, yeah.
She's 6'3" in real life, and the movie doesn't hide it, and she is clearly taller than John David Washington, and Christopher Nolan clearly has in mind. And it even comes, like, there's a scene where her tallness is an asset in that car chase where she's trying to get a door open, and she's able to, you know, reach across with her foot to the front door of the car to open the car door. So I enjoyed that a lot, because sometimes, you know, tall women in movies aren't allowed to look taller than especially the leading man, and that's when the apple boxes come out, and it's so noticeable sometimes. But here's a movie that let a tall woman be tall. Praise be.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, they didn't hide it. You know, John David, I think he's, you know, I don't know, like 5'8" or something. And yeah, you know. That was great. I know a couple, you know, women who are above average, and they loved that. They thought it was great. You know? It's not something that's done to a large degree in film. You know, models,
no,
taller than average, but actresses, yeah, you know, it's not like that. So yeah, it's not even a small thing. I think it's great that she was 6'3".
I think she's 6'3".
Yeah, yeah. Taller than both of us, too.
She's almost half a foot taller than me. So it's... It would definitely be noticeable if I were to stand next to her. But yeah, she was really great. We kind of skipped over Pattinson, because Pattinson is really good, and I think there are two modes of thought about Pattinson. There are the people who are just like so profoundly focused on the fact he was in Twilight and are kind of unable to forgive him for it. And I think
that's the kind of guy I am.
Yeah.
not so much for Twilight, but because of the Goblet of Fire, like, he's a real jerk, right? I don't appreciate the blame he pushes onto Harry Potter. But it wasn't this. It was some other film, one you and me reviewed. I think he was in it. Where I like him now, and it's like Timothy Chalamet. I didn't like, but Dune looks really cool. So yeah, Robert Pattinson, Timothy Chalamet. I like them now. But you're right. There's a lot of people, and I was one that didn't like him because of Twilight, or for me, some of his other earlier works. Mm-hmm. But he is a phenomenal actor. So good on him.
Yeah, there's
he's something... the most lovable in it. He's funny, you know. He's got some more depth to him.
Oh yeah, no, he's
more,
he's
more clear depth, more clear depth. John David Washington's character does, but he's a very quiet guy, right?
No, there's what I like about. Yeah, what I like about Robert Pattinson is he kind of, like, understands his role in this, like, using the James Bond kind of model, where he's, you know, he's the sidekick that is helping Bond along, which means, like, he doesn't have to be terribly focused on being perfect all the time, and he can throw in the odd joke, and he can be more personable. And
his character does have a sprinkle of fun.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan, quite, yeah, so he's fun. He's fun all around.
It almost feels like at times he's in a bit of a different movie than everybody else,
but they're at that, you know.
It's I mean, he's definitely interesting. And I will say that for John David Washington, they unfortunately call his character the protagonist. Like, he's never given a name in the film, and all the materials call him the protagonist, which is so pretentious, I can't even handle it. But
I guess it's a little pretentious.
But he himself, the actor John David Washington, is really, really good. And
he was a straight actor in it, but he was a great one, right? He was a great main character for an action film.
And you see, I saw a lot of hints of his father in it, like a lot of that, you know, low key, everyman kind of charisma, especially in that scene with Michael Caine when they're at the fancy restaurant, and he asks the waiter to box it up, and he's like, "No, we will not." And it's that was a really fun scene.
His encounters with Dimple Kapadia, Priya,
right.
His encounters and discussions with her are a lot of fun. I like it. I've had a couple people that said they didn't like John David Washington, but I think it's because they viewed him more as, you know, not a straight character, but more someone who himself would be you know, entertaining or kind of wild or whatever. But I thought he was great for being the protagonist.
Yeah, it's very subtle. Like, James Bond isn't a great character study because he's basically a killing machine in a tuxedo. So you have to be very kind of slick with the way you characterize. And I think Christopher Nolan very much had that in mind with the protagonist, with David Washington role. So there are scenes where he's very charming and he gets the cool one-liners, and then the rest of the time he's very much like the operator and on point getting the mission done. And I think that, I mean, that is also kind of the point of the character too, but I think it shows he has a lot of promise. I mean, Black Klansman showed he had a lot of promise, of course, but, you know, he can also very much do the thing that his father can do, which is be the leading man.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie, it wasn't my kind of show, but he was really great in Ballers too. He's great in it. He's a very in-depth, lovable athlete in it that says a lot of truth to that industry that you might not know of. But also how, you know, that's not the athlete's fault. They're great. Yeah, he's great. He's great. And this is a major picture. He's the main character, and I'm just really glad for him.
I will have to take your word for it on Ballers.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't watch much of it, but he was good in it. Yeah, it's not, I don't think it's your cup of tea. It's not, it wasn't really mine either.
Touche. Any final thoughts about Tenet?
I'm trying to think here. Well, we only mentioned briefly. I thought Michael Caine's part was really fun.
Well, Michael Caine's part was brief.
Yeah. Michael Caine and their kind of military guy, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Ives, he was fun too.
Yeah, that was a nice little pop-up for him.
I think it's good. It was the kind of film where there is a minimal amount of characters that get major screen time, but those two and the one I mentioned, Dimple Kapadia, I thought they were really great kind of minor characters.
And Himesh Patel.
More breath to the film.
Yeah, and Himesh Patel, who was actually in Inception, is in this. I think people saw him in the trailer and started thinking that, ooh, what if this is an Inception sequel on the down low? But he plays an entirely different guy.
Yeah, I liked him. I would have been okay if he was maybe in it a pinch more. But but again, that might have taken away the focus from just Robert Pattinson, Neil and the protagonist, and Kate.
I think they call her Kat, yeah.
Yeah, there's no E.
But I mean, that's, yeah.
Honestly, like, unlike you with the audio, I was trying to think of any. I don't really have any cons for this film. I really think it's one people should see. I should also say Christopher Nolan, I'm not in love with him. Like, Inception was okay. It was kind of pretentious, and Batman's are all right, but I don't really like the Bane one. This isn't, and like I said, I don't think I reviewed it with you, but I did not like Dunkirk. I almost fell asleep during Dunkirk, and I have watched, you know, like 5-hour films and loved the whole thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I could watch the Andy Warhol Empire State Building film for 9 hours. I'd rather watch that, and it's less likely I would fall asleep than for Dunkirk. So I'm not a Nolan fan overall, but Tenet is great. So it's not biased. I just personally think it's great, and just anybody listening, if you like the audio, you're not the only one. You're not the only one.
I wish he would maybe, and he can take my career advice for what it's worth, but I think maybe for his next one, he should go maybe a bit smaller again, because in evaluating his filmography for the first part of this week's show, I think a lot of his best stuff was his early stuff when he didn't have big budgets to work with. I mean, like Memento, but also his like super indie first movie Following, where he's playing with a lot of the same themes about identity and trust and only knowing half the story while you're in the middle of it. I think, or even something like The Prestige, which was after Batman Begins, so it was kind of like in the middle there before he became so huge. But I really think he should explore something smaller before going back to something bigger, because I'm not sure what else he can do with these kind of like James Bondy style
sci-fis.
But yeah, I don't know if he's done it all, but I would like to see him explore something a little more low key. To
see if you mean one maybe more focused on like the plot than the technological advancements.
Yeah, like find the tools again. You know, see what suits you. It doesn't have to be big. It doesn't have to be an IMAX. I mean, he may be single-handedly holding up IMAX in the movie industry at this moment, but it may be worth going a bit smaller for the next one. Peter, if people want to find some more info from you or talk boomies, how can people find you on the internet?
Mr. Towerak, YouTube and Twitter.
And that is it for this week's show. We hope you liked it, and if you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com, or you can download it on the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean, or through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. And speaking of Spotify, you can find the playlist with almost all the music from End Credits, from the entire history of the show. You find it on Spotify. Just search for End Credits on CFRU. You can also find us on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back tomorrow at 5 p.m. on CFRU for News and Politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can go to my news and politics site, guelphpolitico.ca, and you can read my writing about horror movies at Nightmare on Film Street at nofspodcast.com. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU, 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for more end credits, and we will see you then.